Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This podcast is sponsored by Petplan, who are the UK's number one pet insurer. I've always used Petplan for Raymond, as they cover things other insurers don't, and they can even pay your vet directly, which can be a big help. No, Raymond, that doesn't mean you can spend all the extra cash on treats. Terms, conditions and excesses apply. Petplan is a trading name of Allianz Insurance PLC.
What sort of things would you talk about originally, before you'd found your comic voice?
I used to say, dolphin-friendly tuna. Yeah, I don't care how well they get on with dolphins.
I quite like that.
Yeah, well, I could have done with you maybe in the audience.
This week on Walking the Dog, Raymond and I took a stroll on London's Parliament Hill with comedian, actor and poet Tim Key. Tim is an award-winning stand-up, but he's also very well known for his work with Steve Coogan, playing one of my favourite TV characters ever, Alan Partridge's sidekick Simon. Tim doesn't have a dog, which is probably why he gets oddly excited whenever he sees one and randomly shouts out, "Doggy!" And I really think by the end of it, Raymond was luring him over to the dog side. Tim, I should also say, is a brilliantly funny poet. His new poetry anthology is called Chapters, and it's a thing of joy. So go grab yourself a copy at utterandpress.com, plus Amazon and all the usual places from February the 14th. And for more Tim updates, you can go to timkey.co.uk or his Instagram at timkeypoet. I really hope you enjoy our chat. I think it's time I hand over to him now. So let's get on with it. Here's Tim and Raymond.
Doggy. Come on, doggy. Dog. Have we started?
Yeah.
Come on, doggy. He hasn't got any bigger, has he? Let's put it that way. Do your listeners... Are they sort of on top of what he looks like?
Yeah. Well, how would you describe him?
He is what he is. That's the best I can say. Look, some of your makeup's on the floor.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this isn't a very professional start, is it?
No, you wouldn't catch Parky with his lipstick on the floor.
Well, look at this fella.
Oh, yeah. Big dog.
Lovely dog.
Yeah, that's a good dog. I forgot about this podcast that you have to constantly reference all the dogs you see.
What, do you not like...
I like dogs.
But do you not like small talk?
Well, in general?
Mm.
Oh, yeah, I'm a classic for darkening the eyes. My friend, he can't bear it when we go walking in the Lake District. He's really chirpy with everyone. You know, when you sort of come across someone on a mountain, he's just, you know, hello, all of that stuff. And I just, you know, get my head down.
Come here. He's got a very expressive face, Ray, hasn't he,
yeah,
Tim?
Yeah, he does, actually.
What does he remind you of? I've had him compared to all sorts of things in the past. Ed Miliband said he was a toupee. Alistair Campbell said he was a bog brush.
Deck, maybe?
Deck?
A little bit. What do you think?
From Anton Deck.
Is there any other?
You're right.
Yeah, there's a bit of Deck, isn't there? Deck, so I think Deck's very inquisitive. I think Deck is... Have you met Deck? I bet you have.
Yeah.
What's Deck like?
Only briefly, but he had a very good energy.
Yeah, I bet.
Have you met him?
No, I'd love to meet Deck. Do you know what? I would hand back everything I've ever done in my life to meet Deck. And I'd hand back all the people I've met, including, up to and including Frank, just to have 15 minutes with Deck.
So we're in London's leafy Parliament Hill.
Yeah. Well, we're Parliament Hill's just up there, but we're on Hampstead Heath, I'll give you that.
I'm with the very fabulous Tim Key.
Yep.
And my dog, Raymond.
Yeah.
So what's your history with dogs, Tim?
Oh, right. Chased by one when I was about 10, a German Shepherd, when we left a campsite, chased after the car. And then bitten by one when I was about 13, Jack Russell. Had to have a tetanus jab. And then your one, I suppose.
So really, I'm very fortunate to have you on this, because it doesn't sound like you've had a brilliant experience with dogs.
Oh, I've had some decent experiences with dogs. I had an experience with a dog recently, actually. If you want a dog story.
Go on.
Well, I was making a feature film. And at the wrap party, there was some decent fun at the wrap party. It was actually 3 days before we finished shooting the film, which is quite controversial with a wrap party. And then drove home from Swansea to a place called Larne. And then someone left their phone and camera in the car. So then I took the phone and camera down the hill to reunite it with Tina. And Tina had arrived at the bottom of the hill with Steph, her housemate, and two dogs, Rouge and Daisy. And I mean, I've always loved Rouge. And so I asked if I could take Rouge back to my accommodation. And then Daisy didn't want Rouge to go without her. So I took Rouge and Daisy home, and they slept in my bed.
Oh! Was Daisy the dog, yeah?
Well, I mean, I don't think I'm going to come on your podcast and just talk you through a situation where at a rat party I went home with a girl called Daisy.
I just thought you might slip up and I'd catch you out.
So anyway, it was my good fortune to snag this girl, Daisy.
Oh, thank you. He is. He's called Raymond.
Oh, Raymond. Very good. Oh, hello. Gorgeous.
Thank you. He gets a lot of love, Tim.
Yeah, that crashed straight into my anecdote.
Yeah, so growing up in the Key household.
Yep.
What was the pet situation?
Two cats.
Called?
Sooty. And Sweep.
There is often a bit of a situation.
Okay.
When you get the double act name, isn't there?
Oh, great, yeah.
There's something slightly sad.
Yeah.
Because unless they leave this earth at the same time, you're stuck with one half of a double act.
We were stuck with Sweep. And I've got to say, I mean, it's horrible to actually say it on air, but Sweep wasn't quite so nice to stroke. She was a bit coarse because one time she knocked over a pot of turps and all of her hair fell out. So then she had to grow the hair back, and it never was. I mean, it was always very nice to have Sooty on your lap, but Sweep slightly less so.
And this was Bill and Carol, your mum and dad, who I love the sound of Bill and Carol.
Carol and Bill, traditionally.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
You grew up in, was it a village in Cambridgeshire?
Yeah, I grew up in Impington.
What's Impington like?
You know, just a sort of nice, basic little village, I suppose. I mean, there's two villages next to each other. Clamped together, you know when that can happen. They're called Histon and Impington. And then you have like stuff like there's one pub called the Rose and Crown where one bar is in Histon, the other bar's in Impington, that sort of stuff.
And Carol and Bill, what do they do?
Well, I mean, they're retired now. Carol was last seen in a school as a learning support assistant. And Bill, a sort of engineering type individual. A sort of a electro microscopes. Oh. You know the really powerful ones where you can see a fly's eye.
So they're clever people, your parents.
Yeah, they are pretty clever.
And so they're quite academic. Were you academic?
I was a bit of a swotto. I used to do my homework, come home from school, get my homework done, then I was free. And then, you know, latterly, when there was things like coursework, I'd get that done. You know, I didn't really like the deadline looming, so I would like finish a little early.
And if your parents had to describe you, what would they have said? If someone had said, oh, what's little Timothy like?
I think I was quite shy.
I can imagine that.
Well, why did you pull that face then?
I just found it really sweet. I like shy Tim.
Yeah, I was shy. Still am shy sometimes.
So were you not, did you hang out with sort of extroverts at school and stuff, or were you with the shy guys?
No, no. You could tend to find me in sort of Blockbuster choosing which two videos to watch with my pals. I was that sort of guy, I think.
And
occasionally a bit of ten-pin bowling.
Were you always funny?
I do remember liking making people laugh, I think. You know, at sort of age kind of 8, I think that was probably something that was happening. You know, giggling at the back of the classroom, that sort of stuff. I think that was definitely on the agenda.
And it often starts with kind of taking the piss out of teachers and things and thinking, oh yeah, this is good.
Yeah, there was a lot of that. But not in a kind of, front and centre, just sort of sneaky and at the back. I think if you would sort of pluck someone from my school and say, did he do that? They'd go, I don't think so. I wasn't like standing on a table and ripping my teachers to shreds. Just a little bit of snide, you know, bubbling under.
You went to university, you went to Sheffield. Why did you do Russian?
Because I went to, in my year, I had a year off after sixth form and opted to go to, amazingly, live in Kyiv for 4 months and teach English. And then when I came back, decided to change my degree from English language and linguistics to Russian studies so that I could eventually go back to Ukraine. That was the plan, amazingly.
What did you make of Russia? Did you like living there?
Yeah. I suppose if you find any new country at that point, it's always going to be a bit of a laugh because you're with your pals and you're sort of marauding around Russia for a year.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I quite liked it. But I really liked Kyiv, really liked Ukraine.
Did your parents, were they really thrilled? They must have been really proud of you.
What, when I studied Russian?
Well, just that's quite an achievement, I think.
Well, there was, they came and visited me, and I do remember them, you know, us sort of, hailing a cab, and me sort of, you know, saying to the guy, I mean, this thing is, this is what they hear. They go, I say, ну давайте, 40. And he goes, нет. Нет, 50. 40, давайте. 50. Ну, 45. Ну, давай. And then we get in the car, and my parents are like looking at me going, wow, it is fantastic. But the conversation that we've just had is me going, 40? And him going, 50. Me go, 40, come on. And him going, 50. And me going, 45. And him going, get in.
And they're going, the romance of this language.
I could speak it quite well.
Do you still speak it very well? I presume that
I can speak the accent I've got.
I still think when you have studied it to that level, and also when you've spent time living there, you must be really aware of sort of bad accents and things in TV dramas.
Oh right. Well, it's more when you see a If I was to see an English actor playing a Russian person and speaking Russian, I think I'd sort of notice that.
Mm.
I think Bond does a little bit of the old Russian in one of his films.
Which Bond?
Daniel Craig. I think he says a couple of words. I think they were pretty good.
Who's your favourite Bond?
Well, who do you think? Same as you. Roger Moore.
Lazenby.
I love Lazenby.
So, post-Russia,
yeah,
you obviously ended up auditioning for Footlights.
I did, actually, yeah.
But
heavily implying that I was at Cambridge. And by heavily implying, I mean saying Cambridge. I think mostly everyone says good luck to me.
Mm.
I think when people... When I've told people that I've done that, you know, in podcasts, I think people say good luck to you.
Do some people not say that?
I don't think many people are saying bad luck to you. I think the only person who's got, who could say bad luck to you is probably the next person along who didn't get into the show.
It didn't really turn into an issue, did it? There were only a few things, like you didn't have the email address, the Cambridge email address, and you were able to say...
Yeah. Oh, I said, when I did the audition, there was like, you had to write your email address down. And so I wrote it on a list. I just added mine to the list, and all of the other ones said things like s.hill@cantab.ac.uk and then d.ullathorne@cantab.ac.uk and then timkey5 at BT Internet.
Did they not question it then?
They did say... they did question it. They said, oh, where's your college address? And I said, I'm waiting for that to come through. Well, and they're quite good, those sorts of phrases, aren't they? Because they don't really mean anything. I suppose, though, that was my plan, was to say, yeah, that I was waiting for my college address to come through. I mean, if it wasn't a lie and it was real life, I guess I would have been really frustrated. I should have maybe made out I was more frustrated by that.
You should have gone, oh.
Yeah. Yeah, don't ask me. Ask the bloody college. They haven't sent my email address through.
I would have done it like this. I would have gone...
Oh, here we go.
Well, it's funny you should mention that.
Yeah, exactly.
And I would have done it like that and I would have said...
Well, of course you would have done it like that. But I think my whole plan was to just try and keep it, like, don't get involved in any of it.
Much so don't plan.
If they go, oh okay, so which college are you at? I'd answer the question, but I wouldn't go this college. And you know, it's fantastic there actually. If you ever get the chance, we have a fantastic pub quiz on the Thursday. I just was like, play it with a very straight bat.
That's where people go wrong. They provide too much detail.
Well, and they think that's beneficial. They think that gives them the ring of truth.
It's like when people say, sorry, I couldn't make it, or sorry. The thing is, what's happened is that then this happened. No.
No.
Immediately, your credibility's
gone.
Well,
my friend's father-in-law just, he doesn't provide any excuses. And so now my friend does that, and now I do that as well. And we call that pleading the Barry. You have to just plead the Barry.
Is he called Barry?
Yeah. His father-in-law's called Barry. So you plead the Barry. So someone will go, do you fancy doing this at 3 o'clock on Saturday with me and Michael? And you just go, oh, I can't, I'm afraid.
So much
now,
better.
No one's going to say why. Yeah. But I think I spent too much of my adult life saying, oh, I'm so sorry, I'm just so snowed under. If I can, I'll try and make it like a little later.
Yeah.
But you just say, oh, I can't make it, I'm sorry. It's really good. It's an absolute silver bullet. I did a brilliant one today where someone asked me to do a gig. And I just said, oh, sorry, I'm out for this one. Usually I'd have said, oh, I'm so sorry, I've got another one that night. Or, you know, I'm not exactly sure how my schedule's all working that month. But I'm out for this one. I mean, I'm not. I could do the gig. That's the amazing thing.
Is that something you've consciously worked at, though? Do you think you were a bit more of a people pleaser when you were younger?
Oh, I think I definitely still am. But, yeah, definitely a people pleaser. I always get kind of... It amazes me when people aren't. You must be, mustn't you?
Massively.
Yeah.
And I'm so...
The idea of, like... someone not being pleased. You have to please these people. Spend my life doing it.
I'm so impressed, Tim, aren't you, when someone is able to just offer a clean no.
Yeah, I love the no.
You know who's very good at that?
Yeah, Frank.
Frank Skinner is the master of... the direct no that doesn't cause offence.
I mean, it's brilliant. You feel so good when you give a no, because what you need, what people want in their lives, you have to understand, all everyone needs in their lives is a quick no. That's all you want. The quick no means you can move on with things.
Yes.
Always a quick no, and that works with any example at all.
The people-pleasing thing is interesting because I imagine as a performer, and you're quite an in-demand performer, that's something you do have to slightly cultivate, but you have to learn it a bit because you can't do everything that's asked of you.
Not quite, no. I understand the question, but I think I'm a bit less busy than you're implying. I mean, I say it's good to give a quick no, but I don't usually have to.
But I think also you're quite liked, and I think that can have its own pressures.
But that's only because I try and be liked.
It's only because you people please.
Yeah, people please.
You ended up being part of Footlights and performing with them. And there was no dramatic Talented Mr. Ripley, Talented Mr. Timkey reveal.
Oh, what is that? What's the reveal?
There's no reveal is what I'm saying.
No, there was. Well, there was a reveal. There was once a reveal where about maybe 2 months into the process, when I was now in there with the six of us, and there was a couple of directors, there's a dog, and a couple of producers, and we all had, you know, dinner and stuff because we'd finished writing the script. Hello, doggy. And at that point, the director did say to me, I think that this guy's got something he wants to say. And then I didn't reveal it to everyone. But I mean, everyone was like, I mean, to be fair.
Has he cleared it with you beforehand?
I think so.
Oh, I hope so. Yeah, I don't like this guy otherwise.
Oh, you do like this guy?
Oh, do I?
Yeah, oh, he will do, yeah. He's a people pleaser.
Oh, one of us.
Yeah, he's one of our lot.
And then you decided, you knew you wanted to be a comic at that point.
No, at that point I was just kind of, you know, floating along, going with the flow. It was quite a difficult thing to envisage that you might be a comedian, I think. I mean, like, as in, you can sort of, it seems possible to be a journalist, or, you know, to be a lawyer, or you know, work for the Home Office or something. That all seems like possible stuff.
Yeah.
But to be a comedian, that does feel a bit far-fetched. So the only way I think that I could do it was for it to sort of gradually become a more and more normal thing until you realise that you're doing it. There was never like a bit, you know, 2 years out where I'm thinking, I want to be a comedian. It just sort of happens.
And when you started, Tim, you initially did slightly more, I suppose, traditional observational stuff, didn't you?
Oh, what, as a stand-up?
Yeah, when you first...
Oh, I just couldn't do it. I mean, I basically did... I did it 10 times and then quit.
What was your early stuff like? I'd love
Terrible.
To see it.
I mean, was you it? Won't be able to see it. I had maybe 10 things I had to say, and... You what? Go on stage and talk for 5 minutes. Oh! Doggy! That dog just jumped up and tried to bite your dog.
I didn't like it.
No, he has to go now, that dog.
Do you know, I always get an instinct, and I'm usually right. I knew he'd be trouble.
Yeah, he's not one of us, is he, that dog?
I knew he was trouble when he walked in.
Yeah.
We were talking about your comedy when you started out. What sort of things would you talk about originally, before you'd found your... comic voice?
I used to say dolphin friendly tuna. Yeah, I don't care how well they get on with dolphins.
I quite like that.
Yeah, well, I could have done with you maybe in the audience.
What else did you do?
I can't remember.
Did you do any football stuff?
I think I used to say, you know, when you sort of are walking along towards someone and you both kind of go left and then both go right, you know, that awkward thing. I think I said it would be really useful at this stage for someone with authority like David Beckham to just do a press conference where he just says, from now on, everyone is going to go to their left.
Again, I mean, I like it.
Yeah, okay. Well, again, they didn't. And I mean, I did this stuff. I literally had like 10 jokes or 10 things to say, and it would last 5 minutes, and I did it 10 times. So that means probably I did stand up for basically an hour and then quit. An hour over the period of, over the course of maybe 5 months.
You quit?
Yeah, quit. Totally quit. 2002.
And what did you do then?
Well, then I was like working with Alex Horn as his assistant on stage. And then I was also writing a little one-man play, which I took to Edinburgh. And then maybe by about 2 years later, 2004 maybe, I'd started writing poems. And then shortly after that, my friend Brino organised a gig. Well, we all organised it, let's be fair. And it was in his lounge. It was called Live in Breen's Lounge. And the acts would climb in through the window of his lounge and do 5 minutes and leave. And Mark Watson compared it. Alex Horn did it. And we'd all met Paul Foot, and he headlined it. And they asked me to do stand-up, and I said I wouldn't do it, but I'd do some poems. So I read my poems out, and that's how my act started that night.
And when you say your poems, had you been writing this anyway?
Yeah, I'd written about 200 poems, I think, and no one had heard them.
Was there a part of you that felt, oh, this isn't, I don't know if I can do this as comedy?
Why do you say that?
I suppose the reason I say that is just because you were saying comedy didn't seem like a world that was open to you. So the idea of doing comedy that was not the kind of traditional comedy you would have seen on TV, for example, I just wonder if that felt more daunting or like something you...
No, this just felt like doing something with my friends, and I think I just had a hunch that I could at least make them laugh with it. But like I say, it had nothing to... doing that compared to starting a career in comedy, the two things didn't have anything to do with each other. This was just... Maybe if I read this stuff out, people might find that quite funny.
And they did.
Well, to be honest, it was literally... When I climbed through that window, I decided to wear a suit. And when I climbed through, I put my tie on. And then I opened a can of Red Stripe. And I had Russian, like Soviet lounge music on. And I read my poems out of little scraps of paper and notepads. So, I mean, amazingly, it was completely, totally, fully formed what my act is now. From the first time I did it. Which is weird, because I think if I'd done what I was doing for another 5 years, I think it would have just, you know, just twisted and turned, and I would have just been like working
and...
Sit
down for a minute.
Yeah, let's sit down. Working and working at it. And I think I would have probably got nowhere, or maybe even, you know, become sort of mediocre.
Do you think so?
Yeah, but with the other one, when I did it with poetry, it was immediately... kind of very fun and completely mine, and it meant that I mean literally I've done that now, that same stuff for that way of doing things I've done now for about 15-20 years.
And you won the Edinburgh Comedy Award, as it's now called.
I did, actually, yeah, for my sins.
Were you really, did you feel like, oh, I've arrived now?
Oh, I felt great. Yeah, I'm not really a sort of, you know, too cool for school kind of a guy. That award was like a, that felt like a big moment. Frank Skinner gave it to me. You know Frank?
Did
you work with him on the radio?
Did Frank give you the award?
Frank gave me the award.
Were you a fan of Frank's beforehand?
Not really, but that put him on my radar. when someone gives you an award, you at least have the common courtesy to Wikipedia them. I was a fan of Frank.
Were you?
Yeah. Yeah, of course. I think this is 2009, so I'd had a lot of Frank. I'd had a lot of, like, you know, Fantasy Football League and all that stuff.
You remind me of Frank in a lot of ways. Mm. I think in terms of your... how you approach comedy.
Okay.
Because I do think there's a sort of integrity about what he does in terms of, there's kind of a line in the sand. There are certain things he wouldn't do. And he said to me, I really like the idea of this, but there's that one thing that would make me wake up in the middle of the night for the rest of my life thinking, why did I compromise myself?
Well, what I want to tell you is I went on Soccer AM. I mean, for a start off, that they weren't at all interested in talking about my Radio 4 documentary. I mean, they phone you up, don't they? And they have like a research chat. I'd spoken to the guy on the phone. I told him it's all about Daniil Kharms, this absurdist Russian writer in the 1930s. And then I get there and, you know, AP McCoy is there, the jockey. Franny Jeffers is there, talking about whether or not he's going to go and play in Qatar or somewhere. And then another guy comes up to me, similar sort of age again, and says, yeah, just talking through the stuff you're going to be saying about. We're going to talk about Steve Coogan. And I'm like, yeah. And there's obviously this Radio 4 documentary, which is obviously why I was on it. And he's like, yep. Then I go on the thing. They talk about Steve Coogan. And then they talk about this thing I'd done where I'd mentioned that Craig Johnston, the guy who invented the Predator boot, he also invented the technology that means if you take a can out of a minibar in a hotel room, it senses that you've taken the can out, so you can't just take the can out and replace it with one from Tesco's the next day. I'd mentioned this on some other show, and they asked me about that, as if like that was my career, was talking about that. He's like, so, and you've got something interesting to say about Craig Johnston, haven't you? I'm like, I don't think so. He goes, with the fridge? So now that's my anecdote. And then they're talking to AP McCoy, and I'm thinking, I don't know how I'm going to swing this back round to my Radio 4 documentary. Then we all go out into the car park, and we have to hit the football in the top bins and answer questions. And then when you get the question right, you hit the ball into the top bins. And I kept on missing the top bins. Anyway, AP McCoy wasn't shooting into the top bins because he had, like, wedding shoes on. And then right at the end, we have one final question. We get it right, and they egg AP McCoy on to just at least have one shot. He gets it into the top bins, and then everyone goes wild, and they're sort of, you know, dancing and, like, grabbing each other and, like, it's, you know, singing Campione or something. And I'm joining in, and I'm like, absolutely, I'm hating it so much that when I went to Australia later that year, I went on a radio show with people who had liked my work, and they said, look, we've got to finish with this. You went on Soccer AM. I'm like, yeah. And they go, that's one of the funniest things I've ever seen. Seeing you trying to join in with that dancing at the end, you were hating that, weren't you?
Hello. Hello. Beautiful Frenchie.
There's no talking to some people. How do you know he's French?
The dog was Frenchy, not the man. Why? Oh, no, he's still there.
Of course he's still there. Why he hasn't had long enough to get away.
Why didn't he answer me, Tim, that man?
Not everyone is on the same page as you, Emily. One of these days you're going to realise that.
I just love talking.
I hate it.
Do you? You're doing quite well today.
Well, I know. It's because I know we're going to get onto the book at some point.
Okay, we'll do it now.
This podcast is sponsored by Pet Plan, who help keep the nation's dogs happy and healthy. There was so much to think about when I got my dog, Raymond. Toilet training, grooming, food, and just how many belly rubs can one woman reasonably be expected to give to a Shih Tzu every day? But one thing I've never had to worry about is paying for veterinary care, because I decided to insure Raymond with Pet Plan, who are the UK's number one pet insurance provider. Oh, don't get jealous, Raymond. Of course you're still my number one. Just a tad on the high maintenance side. Terms, conditions and excesses apply. Pet Plan is a trading name of Allianz Insurance PLC.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
I was actually going to talk to you about, we'd gone on to you winning the Edinburgh Comedy Award.
Yeah.
And then I think obviously at that point you sort of knew, right, this is my act now.
Yeah.
There was no question of you going back.
No, that was now, that had set in now, my act.
And when did you first start to publish your
great question
poetry?
Already I'd started then, but that happened in 2009 when Frank garlanded me, and I'd published my first book in 2007, which was a book of poems in a fawn cover designed by a recently graduated art and design student called Ryan Raz, and it was my poems, his design, and also little tricksy little things like recipes and bits and pieces. And I think we made 700 of them and sold them in 2007. It's a really nice book. You can't get it anymore. I haven't got one. Sometimes someone comes up to me at a gig and asks me to sign one, and I think, I wish I had that.
Elmo, please don't pass.
Oh, Elmo, what a great name.
Thank you. He looks like an Elmo.
Elmo, you brought us the stick. Thank you.
Let's go.
Goodbye, Elmo.
So you've had a couple of anthologies out, Tim Key, and you have just... You are just bringing out your latest poetry anthology.
I am.
Chapters. Which I've just read.
Have you?
And I really loved it.
Oh, good.
What's lovely about it is that it's some of your greatest hits. Now, that's what I call... Tim Key.
Yeah, it is a bit now 2023, isn't it?
And it also includes a sort of brilliant kind of director's commentary element, which is this ongoing conversation between you and your design collaborator, Emily.
Emily Juniper.
They're lovely because they're sort of in footnote form. And are these based on genuine conversations you've had with her? And then slightly ramped up?
Yeah, ramped up. Well, there's a sort of a mixture. I think when we first started collaborating together, I think we made a pack of playing cards. And I landed upon that sort of way of doing things where, I don't know how that happened, but I think maybe it probably did come from once having a phone call with her and putting the phone down and just typing up three or four lines that we'd said. I think I'm kind of quite fortunate in writing this stuff, where literally I've kind of decided that my genre will be the two things that I like writing, which is dialogue and poems. I mean, sometimes Emily Juniper does say, or sometimes we'll be talking and she'll say, oh dear, that's going in the book, isn't it? And it does, really. But yeah, so that's what the book is.
So this is classic Tim Key.
Great.
From Chapters, this is something I really loved. I went into the hairdresser's and showed him a photo of a bloke. I'd like a haircut like that, cheers. He went very serious. That's my brother, he said. A little less off the fringe though, I continued, miming scissors, licking my lips. Where did you get this photo of my brother? I rubbed my hands together and pulled out my plastic shawl. I fixed it round my neck and did a little curtsy. I waddled over to the chair.
Yeah.
I love that.
Oh, that's good.
I think the way you write poetry, Tim, is You've got a proper poet's mind, haven't you?
I think I probably have got quite a kind of, I suppose, a little bit of a slightly creative mind. And I think what's quite lucky is the fact that I've started writing, you know, inconsequential little bits of poetry has meant that I've always had a kind of an outlet in a way that maybe at some other comedians, it means I can just churn out a load of stuff that no one will ever see. And I think that is probably quite good for getting better at writing and just sort of keeping going creatively. Otherwise you maybe just start to think of jokes, and that's not easy to do. Or you start to think of what would be a good idea for a film or something, and that's a bit too daunting. Whereas poetry, I can think of an idea, and then approximately 2 minutes later, it's done, it's there on the paper.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is kind of quite good, I think, because it means that you can unleash a lot of ideas, some of which will never see the light of day, but at least they're sort of, they're there.
No chat with Tim Key.
Here we go.
Would be complete.
Now then. Here it comes.
Without.
Here it comes.
An Alan Partridge mention.
Oh, great. That's a good idea.
Because.
Fantastic.
That's how a lot of people know you.
Yeah, and him.
Do you get recognised for that mainly? If people come up to you and say, is it in reference
to
Simon, his sidekick?
No, it's a real. It's a real mishmash. I get all sorts, particularly in London. Quite a lot of people, I think quite a lot of people have seen me live in London. So there's a bit of that, a bit of Partridge, and then a bit of, I pop up in things. That's the thing.
Were you quite nervous when you first worked with Steve Coogan?
I was very nervous. Yeah. It was quite an intense situation, because I was a big Alan Partridge fan, you know, approx 20 years before, you know, when I was like 17, 16. I mean, he's my favourite. Listening to his Knowing Me, Knowing You, and The Day Today, and watching The Day Today, and watching I'm Alan Partridge and stuff. I think it's some of the best stuff ever. So it was very odd to then. I mean, meeting him was one thing. That was a bit of a handful in terms of just keeping yourself together. But then filming the Mid-Morning Matters, that's sort of a double whammy, because you get full on Steve Coogan, and then, to make matters worse, you get an absolute dollop of Alan Partridge in a soundproof room where his character is written as being quite an intimidating character for my guy. So there wasn't really much acting that had to be done.
And does Steve work in quite a way in which you're sort of in character the minute you guys sit down? Or?
Oh, God, no. No, he's not a lunatic. but at the same time, he does have like a... He's dressed as Alan Partridge. And, you know, there's always going to be a little bit of Alan Partridge in... There's a little bit going each way with Partridge and Coogan, probably.
Mm.
I mean, yeah, he'd say himself. But, no, he doesn't... He's not like Poirot.
It's a great reference, and I'm going to have to make you elaborate.
Poirot does do that, doesn't he?
David Suchet, is it?
I think he gets his Poirot on, doesn't he?
What does he do then? So he goes on set and he says, excuse me, I would need you to bring this to me.
But hang on, it's a good accent when he does it on telly, isn't it? Is it not?
You were talking about Steve Coogan, and
yeah.
I've never met him, and I really...
Have you not?
No, and I think I'd really like him.
Yeah. Steve, I really like him.
I feel he has integrity over his work.
Oh, my goodness. Of course he does. I think more than most.
Do you?
Oh, God, yeah. He's really good for that. I mean, you do sometimes... I do sometimes think slightly... do I? Yeah, a little bit. What would Steve... well, not what would Steve do, but, I mean, maybe... What would Steve think if I took this? Not to an enormous extent, but I think you do need to have that kind of slight barometer. You can't just be willy-nilly just doing everything and not expecting. If it is a bit naff, you have to sort of live with the consequences of that, I think. I would never judge anyone at the same time for taking anything. You know, people might need the money, for example. Or they might take it because it'll be a laugh. Might want to keep busy. I mean, with most jobs, there's like some fun to be had, I suppose. And you can't just wait for the perfect thing to come up.
I like what would Steve do?
Yeah, I think what would Steve do is pretty good. But it's only good because, like I say, he is he's quite discerning. He makes choices, and quite sort of bold choices. I mean, to be fair, he did play Jimmy Savile. I'm sure there would have been some people who would have thought, I probably won't do that.
Yeah. What's the favourite type of work that you do?
I'm at a bit of a better position now than before, where I think, if you'd asked me that 10 years ago, I'm definitely thinking... it's whatever I'm not doing at the moment. So, for example, hello, dog.
Tim, there's been a lot of dogs approaching us with sticks while I've been with actually. You.
Go on, doggy.
That dog's obsessed by you, Tim.
Which dog? Which is that? His owner down there. You need to go back to your owner.
What's it called? Bagel.
I think so. Fast dog. Yeah. So about I think 10 years ago, if you've asked me that. I would say if I'm doing my live show at the time, I'd be so racked with nerves before shows and stuff that I'd be thinking there must be an easier way of making a living than doing this. And then you finish it and you just kind of go, great, I now will do some writing instead. And then writing so hard that you think, I mean, this is insane. Like I'd like an acting job now because acting's obviously easy.
Well, you've kind of got that thing where you're infantilised slightly as well, haven't you? Where someone's picking you up, telling you where
right.
to be, looking
exactly.
after your food, you know.
So then you go and do the acting, but then acting's really hard because you have to like learn your lines and also all the people around you are actual actors. So then you think, well, I don't know, maybe I want to just... I think I just need to do live stuff because it's just my... at least it's my words and stuff like that. And you just go in that circle like that. And so whenever I did do a job where I like really enjoyed it, I'd actually notice that, oh, this is probably... like, so I always really enjoy doing my radio show, recording my radio show, which is with Tom Basden and Katie Wicks.
Mm.
And I just love doing it. The writing is pretty hard still, but when you're actually doing it, and I really love radio... it's a good balance of quite high stakes because it's my own thing, but also it is a bit more relaxed making radio, but also you want it to be really, really good.
Well, you're shy guy, as we've established.
Shy guy. I'm not as shy now.
Are you not?
No, but now, since you asked me now and not 10 years ago, I definitely really enjoyed doing my last show. I love doing it.
Look.
He's not got any clothes on, has he, that man?
Have you ever had any famous people wanting to cultivate you a bit?
Oh, that's a good idea. What do you mean, cultivate me? What?
Well, thinking Tim Key's quite a cool person to know. Because I think you might lend credibility to people.
Oh, that's a great idea. That's really good. I think you're the closest I've had.
What do you spend your money on, Tim? What are your luxuries?
It's a great question. Well,
you don't buy expensive cars.
No, I don't have any cars. I think I've got everything now. I think I'm I'm up to date on things that I need. It is quite nice when you have some disposable income, and in other news, you'd really like to buy a record player, because then you can just buy the record player.
But I think your attitude, and I think Frank is very similar to you, is that I've got a record player.
Yeah.
Whereas I think a lot of people think, but I've got to get the record player that...
I'll get the better record player.
Yeah. That I saw Harry Styles had on Instagram or whatever.
But imagine replacing your record player. I can't really imagine doing that.
But what I'm saying is, it's this permanent aspiration towards acquisition... And I don't think you really have that disease, do you?
Well, I don't think I do. But then again, I think part of that is because you have like a... My flat, anyway, is just like... It's full. I mean, I can't really buy a kiln, because where am I putting my kiln?
You're quite content, though, aren't you?
Well, not really. Are you?
I don't think so,
no,
but...
we're not content.
Why not?
Quite content, though. I'll give you that. You can have a veneer of contentment. I mean, bless your little heart, you've just thought that I was content.
I did think that. I still do think that.
I know. Why would I lie? Why would I hide? Why would I say I'm not? There's a lot of things that I am, actually. I kind of quite like... You know what I do, really. I love the fact that I'm able to write a book, and I have a amazing person I collaborate with, and now the book is about to go out. I love that. But I mean, that's only part of that can't be the only thing that makes you content, can it?
But I do like it. But some people wouldn't even acknowledge that. But what they would be saying is, well, how much is so-and-so getting paid for that?
Well, yeah, but I'm very fortunate. I don't know why that hasn't happened, but I'm really lucky that I've never thought that about anyone.
Have you not?
No. And I know of people who do. I think it's because it just all started so slowly. I definitely had a job until I was in my early 30s. And I guess it took me like about sort of 6 years, maybe 7 years of doing it before I could make a living. So I think that gives you a real grounding in thinking, well, this is pretty good. I don't have to go to work now.
Yeah.
And so you're not really thinking, to be fair, you're not thinking, I wish I was as successful as, I don't know, you tell me. One of my contemporaries.
Paddy McGuinness.
Paddy McGuinness, yeah. You don't look across at Paddy McGuinness because you sort of think, I quite like the fact that my stuff is just gradually becoming more and more viable. And I've always felt that I was able to make stuff that I was proud of creatively. Every year there'll be something where I go, I'm really pleased with that, with how that turned out. So, no, I never look across at anyone. I think that the fact that I don't like and find it very difficult, the whole world of panel shows and stuff like that, the fact I didn't really do any of that, means that you find yourself, I think maybe you find yourself a little away from everything, and you don't really like compare yourself with people quite so much, because you're just sort of off somewhere else in the margins. So I think that lack of skill at doing those things is quite useful. You really need to work at having, you need to cultivate a lack of skill in certain areas. Doggy!
I think you secretly quite love Ray.
No.
Tim?
Yeah, I do actually.
He reminds me of you in many ways.
Oh God. Loyal.
He takes the road less travelled.
Oh, that's a good point.
Tim, I know, I can never imagine you getting angry with anyone. You're so calm and good-natured. Mm. How does the key anger express itself?
I think I keep my head pretty well. But, you know, sometimes people push you to the brink, don't they? And then sometimes you have to just kind of take a breath and walk away for a moment.
Well, we're people pleasers. You're a people pleaser, so when you're a people pleaser, you do get pushed to the brink.
Yeah. You don't really like it if people, take advantage of your good nature. Do people do that?
Do they take advantage of your good nature?
You do know sometimes that people are... people treat people differently if they're, like, slightly scared of them. Where you just go, oh, God, I don't want to get on the wrong side of that person. And people don't really mind getting on the wrong side of me, I don't think, because it's similar to the right side, really.
Do they think, oh, Tim will be okay, yeah. Tim won't mind?
Yeah, exactly. I was on a project once where I kept banging my head on the door of the shop in the TV show, and I was like, can someone put like some foam on there, because I keep banging my head. And I banged it like, and I got quite angry because I banged it twice in one morning just going back onto the set, walking through this thing, and they just didn't put the foam up. I was like, just find some foam somehow, because I banged my head twice now. And then I remember thinking, I really hope that the actress bangs her head, because that foam will go right up. And she banged her head, and honestly, I mean, even before her head had bounced off, there was foam there. I think they managed to get the foam up before she banged it. Slid it under.
We need to leave you now. We've just got back to the Lido and Parliament Hill. I've loved my walk with Tim.
We had a lovely walk.
Oh, hang on, I'm just going to pick up his poo. Careful of the poo, ladies.
The poo, ladies.
So, Tim, let's wrap up the podcast now.
Yep. Okay.
I've loved walking with you today.
I had a lovely walk. I always enjoy Hampstead Heath alone, let alone with you two.
Do you think you'll ever get a dog, Tim?
Yeah, probably.
What would you get?
What
type?
Labrador. Well, I'll tell you what, a dog that I've always quite enjoyed is the old Husky.
Yes.
But I don't know much about them. Do they need snow or something?
No, but they can be... They're lovely dogs. Gary Lineker's got a part Husky. He's got a... I don't know what they're called. It's a Husky and a bit of German Shepherd.
Right. He was a brilliant player, wasn't he, Gary Lineker? My parents got me out of bed, and I got to watch him score his hat-trick against Poland.
Never booked,
no. Three against Poland, and then the next match they got me out of bed again. He only goes and gets two against Paraguay.
Is Gary Lineker one of your favourite players?
Oh, God, yeah. I had a poster of him in my bedroom with his little broken wrist.
Do you know, he's going to love this.
He won't. He must get it all the time. Him sliding in, Jimmy Hill going mad on comms. Those were the days, weren't they?
Now he's taken over podcasting.
Weird that, isn't it? Maybe I'll get another poster of him now in the sort of sound room, the engineering room. Have you got one of him in a boardroom I can get?
Maybe what it proves is if you're good at one thing, you can be good at anything.
That's true. Whatever he turns his mind to. Who are the other great people at doing that, the second career?
Oh, yeah. You?
No, I think mine's just one big lump.
Ray's met a Pomeranian.
Oh, that's quite good. That's a lot of fur.
Do you think they know that they're both very furry?
Yeah, they must do. They're living with it. It's their lived experience. I mean, do you know you've got sort of medium-length brown hair?
Yeah, but it doesn't make me run over and start smelling the bum of someone with medium-length brown hair.
No, you've been very disciplined.
What's your dog called?
Is it Boo Boo?
Boo Boo. Boo Boo, Ray!
So this is how it ends. Ray and Boo Boo. Started off as Tim Key and Emily Dean, ends up with Ray and Boo Boo.
Ray's off with Boo Boo now.
Okay.
Tim, thank you so much. And I really insist that you all go out and purchase a copy of Chapters.
Yeah.
Tim's Poetry Anthology, because...
utterandpress.co.uk. Limited edition.
It's so brilliant.
Got to get it while you can. That's going to sell out.
Tim, say goodbye to Raymond.
Goodbye, Raymond. Goodbye, Boo Boo. Boo Boo just kissed Raymond.
Bye-bye, Boo Boo.
Bye-bye, Boo Boo. Goodbye, Ray. See you next time, Ray. Send my love to Gary Lineker.
I really hope you enjoyed that episode of Walking the Dog. We'd love it if you subscribed, and do join us next time on Walking the Dog, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.